If you're familiar with this channel, no doubt you know that I like to take shots at archaeologists or other scientists or debunkers or papers that I think are lacking or dishonest. And this one, wow, does this one take the cake? This paper here was sent to me by Rubate, one of my longtime subscribers, and he was like, you need to make sure and take a gander at this, and I did, and wow. This is going to blow your mind or confirm your suspicions, either one of the two. It's written by three of the worst archaeologists that I've ever had the displeasure of finding out existed, Flint Dibble, John Hoops, and Ken Feagans. All three of these guys, by the time you're done with this video, you're going to probably feel close to the same about them as I do. These guys are... Anyway, it's amazing to me that the Society for American Archaeology would actually put this kind of paper up on its website, but you know what? I'm actually not that surprised that this is exactly the sort of thing that that activist organization that likes to dress itself up in a lab coat and pretend it's not an activist organization would do. So strap yourselves in, because this one's going to hurt your head a little. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. This article is so over the top that it doesn't even wait to start twisting facts to forge a narrative. It just jumps straight into it right off the bat. By the second sentence, let me just read you what we got. Although often known by other names, pseudoarchaeology has been a recurrent theme in archaeology since the inception of the discipline. Emphasizing professionalism was part of the charter reason for the founding of the Society for American Archaeology. But this is rewriting history. One of the reasons that the SAA was founded was to foster a more professional attitude amongst interested amateurs. And pseudoarchaeology, of course, is never mentioned, but that fostering a professional attitude with interested amateurs is the exact opposite of what these guys are doing. They're alienating and ostracizing people. Right? They call people all kinds of names, as we'll see here. They basically, if you're not in line with their beliefs, boy, oh boy, do they really look down on you. Which is goes directly against what the SAA's constitution said. It was founded in 1934, and in 1935, when our constitution was finally chartered and all that crap, this is what it said. The objects of the society are to stimulate scientific research in the archaeology of the New World by creating closer professional relations among archaeologists and between them and others interested in American archaeology, guiding, on request, the research work of amateurs, advocating the conservation of archaeological data and furthering the control or elimination of commercialization of archaeological objects, and promoting a more rational public appreciation of the aims and limitations of archaeological research. People like Hoops, Dibble, and Feagans, they violate the basic tenets of the Constitution of the SAA on the daily. They, like I said, alienate the interested amateur. They do not wait for the person to ask for assistance in order to guide them. They are more than willing to jump in there and guide you whether you like it or not, buddy. And when it comes to debunking people that are pseudo-archaeologists, they have no problem totally overrepresenting the limits of our knowledge that we gain from the field of archaeology. In other words, every single thing that I just mentioned here is them just pissing in the eye of the founding of the SAA, or at least the reasons that it was said to have been founded, but they don't care. You know, as the article continues, you would think maybe they do care. The next part like gives you a glimmer of hope that maybe they're going to find some self-awareness, but don't hold your breath, all right? I'll just spoil that for you now. Purveyors of pseudo-archaeology have begun to refer to our profession as mainstream archaeology. However, given the rising popularity in pseudo-archaeology beliefs among the general public, it is worth asking whether what used to be referred to as fringe has become mainstream belief. Now, instead of following up on this interesting and potentially catalyst for course correction in their own field, a way for them to say, hey, man, we're kind of losing ground to pseudo-archaeology. How could we fix this? Oh, no. They go straight in to a list of times that they've tried to battle pseudo-archaeology and apparently, as they've just admitted, have failed. So here's a list of failures. Here's a list of times we were impotent. Here's a list of times we spun our wheels. The lack of self-awareness there is pretty hilarious. They think they're patting themselves on the back, but the way that this is couched, it's just basically them saying, boy, oh boy, we suck at our job. But anyway, one of the things that they mentioned was the letter that the Society of American Archaeology wrote to Netflix. You guys that have watched me before know I bitch about this all the time. Basically, the SAA wrote a letter to Netflix at not asking, pretty much demanding that the Ancient Apocalypse series be rebranded as fiction instead of a documentary. But of course, rather than spend their time talking about the archaeology aspect of it, they gotta dedicate a big old chunk of it to white supremacy. The assertions Hancock makes have a history of promoting dangerous racist thinking. His claim for an advanced global civilization that existed during the Ice Age and was destroyed by comets is not new. This theory has been presented, debated, and refuted for at least 140 years. It dates to the publication of Atlantis, The Antediluvian World, and Ragnarok, The Age of Ice and Gravel, by Minnesota Congressman Ignatius Donnelly. This theory steals credit for indigenous accomplishments from indigenous peoples and reinforces white supremacy. From Donnelly to Hancock, proponents of this theory have suggested that white survivors of this advanced civilization were responsible for the cultural heritage of indigenous peoples in the Americas and around the world. However, the narratives on which claims of white saviors are based have been demonstrated to be ones modified by Spanish conquistadors and colonial authorities for their own benefit. These were subsequently used to promote violent white supremacy. Hancock's narrative emboldens extreme voices that misrepresent archaeological knowledge in order to spread false historical narratives that are overtly misogynistic, chauvinistic, racist, and anti-Semitic. Now, this is not a scientific complaint. This is not an archaeological issue. This is purely political. It's socio-political, freaking ideological. It has no place in the halls of academia. It has no place in scientific discourse. This is just an attempt to poison the well. And this is really, I've talked about this in the past. They're wrong as well. They are factually incorrect about who started all this. It does not date to Ignatius Donnelly, but they like to pin it on him because he had some words that he said that they can make, look how messed up this guy was. By modern standards, he said some stuff that's pretty messed up. So you saw that is from Donnelly to Hancock. They just tie the two together, and now Hancock is purveyor of this stuff from 140 years ago. It's really, really underhanded. I ain't going to go into all of it. There's a link right there. You can watch that video if you like. My point here is they're scorching the earth. They are deliberately trying to demonize Graham with all this crap. And this is not the only way that they do it, but this is one of their heaviest hitting things, is to just constantly use things that have nothing to do with archaeology in order to demonize him. You don't believe me? Listen to what they got to say next. However, archaeologists need to recognize the importance of this topic. Pseudo-archaeology reinforces anti-science and anti-democracy conspiracy theories and is a threat to peace and democracy. I mean, there's no nuance or separation there at all. Just pseudo-archaeology, it's a threat to democracy and peace. And you would think this has to be hyperbole, right? There's just kind of a little bit of BS there or something, right? That's where my mind went immediately. It's like, you've got to be kidding me, right? But oh no. Stephanie Halmhofer, for example, has documented the effects of pseudo-archaeology, including the work of British author Graham Hancock, had on the thinking of Jacob Chansley, the QAnon shaman who participated in the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. The real-world impact of pseudo-archaeology is readily apparent. Now, regular viewers know I really don't like to talk about politics, but I kind of got no choice here, so I want to touch on this, but I want you to understand that I'm looking at this from a psychological perspective. I'm not taking a side on this. I want you to see where the doublethink here, and I want you to see where they're just weaving a BS narrative. So when they say there's a threat to democracy, they're talking about when they went to the White House and there was violence there and people are trying to, you know, use violence to influence democracy. Well, that is, you know, a threat to democracy. So that's where they're coming from. And whether or not you believe that that was a thing or not, a bad day or not, that's your own personal opinion. What I'm saying is these guys are saying that this was a threat to democracy. That's where they're coming from. the violence used to usurp an election or a law or anything like that. Anytime you have violence used in place of the regular voting apparatus in a democracy, you can call that a threat to democracy. That's really, I don't think that's a controversial position to take. But what's really funny about this is the way that they're like, oh, well, this guy liked Graham Hancock, ergo, this is attached to Graham Hancock. And that's insane. I mean, I'll give you a great example of how they would never do that when it comes to their own side of the fence, because these guys are clearly extremely left-leaning. So, you know, 6 months later, or was it 6 months before? It was in June of 2020, anyway. They had here in my home state of Washington, over in Seattle, a big expensive chunk of town was taken over. They called it the Chaz, and later was the Chop. It was, you know, they occupied the zone. They declared it an autonomous zone. They declared a part of the United States autonomous from the United States, and they used violence to enforce the borders of their little area. This also is, by the same metrics, a threat to democracy, a threat to our peace. Even more so, you could argue, in some ways, less so in others. Definitely not as important symbolically as the White House, but it went on for quite a bit longer. A lot more people were hurt. A lot more property was damaged. And there were so many people involved that had all kinds of beliefs. Some of them probably liked Graham Hancock. Some of them were communists. Some of them were capitalists. Some of them believed that all cops were bad. So when these guys argue that, oh, this is a threat, these guys believe in authority being a problem, and that's where the threat to democracy and the threat to peace come. They don't accept the authority of scientists, and then they don't accept the authority of the White House. That's a slippery slope. You'll see them arguing in this paper. But the idea that all cops are bad isn't a slippery slope that's going to lead to people questioning authority on a fundamental level. See, this is an ideological thing for them. This has nothing to do with honest facts or honest portrayal of reality. If you use their metrics, you could say that people that like the Sega Saturn are potentially a threat to democracy, because I guarantee that one of the people that has done something that's a threat to democracy in the last 10 years played Sega Saturn. So, anyway, you want to get even more tickled? These guys claim in their papers that their target audience is people like me, people in the middle, people that are interested in what Graham Hancock has to say, but somewhat skeptical of the stuff, and are interested in science, but interested in the past. I'm their target audience. they might need some help there, would you say? The popularity of pseudo-archaeology in television shows, books, and other media does not necessarily indicate acceptance, but it does indicate curiosity about and intense interest in archaeology. Kenneth L. Feeder highlights the need to address fence-sitters, the majority who neither completely dismissed nor unquestionably accept pseudo-archaeology claims. You know, I don't know about you, but when they conflate my interest in big rocks with white supremacy and open insurrection, well, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you feel the same way, and you're a little bit alienated by that. It's the kind of thing that makes you a little bit skeptical of them. It's the kind of thing that, even if you agree with them on a political level, that you might recognize as, this is not what archaeologists should be talking about. Why is this in an archaeological paper? What the hell does this have to do with archaeology? This is purely, clearly a tactic, and one that they will not abandon despite the evidence going against them. You can show them whatever you want. You can make whatever arguments they want. These guys will not drop this narrative. And that, when I know somebody is willing to just maintain this position no matter what the evidence says, I have a hell of a time believing things that they say outside of that are loosely attached, because, man, I mean, they've shown that they're willing to just massage the truth to get where they want to go. And I know, you know, they're not accusing anybody of being a white supremacist. There's no accusations of racism here. We're just saying, you know, did you use sources and blah, blah, just, it's, that's what they'd like to tell you. But let's read the next paragraph here. Once fringe, pseudo-archaeology has become mainstream pop culture. Ancient Aliens, hosted by George Sakalis, premiered on TV on History in 2009 and is now in its 19th season. It attributes past culture changes to the influence of extraterrestrials. It was inspired by the long-term success of Eric von Däniken, whose work echoes even earlier authors. Ancient Aliens draws on ideas and writings of Edgar Cayce, Zechariah Sitchin, Graham Hancock, and many others. Jason Colavito traces Ancient Aliens theories in his series and elsewhere to the Theosophists and the fiction of H.P. Lovecraft. The show features hosts, now TV celebrities, and presents its claims in a fast-paced and uncritical manner. It relies on unexplained anomalies, including out-of-place artifacts, and argumentum ad ignorantium, we don't know, but we could be aliens. Series regulars and others cherry-pick comparisons, disregarding context and academic knowledge. Ancient Aliens routinely credits monuments constructed by indigenous people to extraterrestrials, reinforcing white supremacist and racist beliefs. Note that the wording is, in fact, pretty accusatory. I mean, first of all, they tie in Graham Hancock, all this, of course, because you got to get him in there. And then they go straight into, well, it's racist. And they're going to make sure, oh, well, you know, we don't call Graham racist and stuff. We don't ever say that, but that's just a weaselly way to get out of what is clearly the central point of this paragraph. I mean, there's a part there where they do say the things that you would expect an archaeologist to say about ancient aliens, you know? I mean, they are saying that we don't know how things were built that we do have records of. They're using gaps in our knowledge to push aliens in there, yada, yada. These are the kinds of things that I would find, you know, acceptable from an archaeologist. I would actually... preferable. These are the kinds of things that, in my opinion, we need in there. As I've mentioned in the past videos, that skeptics and dreamers together gives us some really interesting stuff, but if the skeptics get all cynical, then the dreamers are off running amok by themselves, and they don't have anybody to put them back on the path. And anyway, what we've got here is basically just that sort of thing. These guys are not at all being skeptical of this entire mess. They're just being assholes about it. And they go back to racism, back to racism, back to racism. And we haven't even gotten to Ancient Apocalypse yet. When this paper does go to Ancient Apocalypse, how much do you want to bet they start beating that same damn drum? Hancock reiterates and lightly updates the arguments from several of his books that an advanced civilization that thrived during the Pleistocene was the origin for agriculture, pyramids, religion focused on death and rebirth, and myths about culture heroes remembered in mythology as gods. He asserts that all direct evidence for the civilization was erased during the Younger Dryas by comets and a catastrophic global flood. Although he neither defines advanced or civilization, Hancock asserts that survivors of this Ice Age civilization that included or was identified as Atlantis taught simple hunter-gatherer societies in the Middle East, the Mediterranean, Southeast Asia, and the Americas how to be farmers. These heroes, described in the series as bearded and in two of his books as white, were subsequently deified and commemorated by pyramids and structures oriented to astronomical phenomena, warning of a future disaster. Now, you'll notice there's no citation for the claim that Hancock has said these guys were white, and that's because it's not so simple. Now, one of his lines of evidence has been and continues to be people of different ethnicities not being in the part of the world that you would expect to find them. But that's not racist, all right? When somebody says Hadrian's Wall, the wall that the Romans built in England, was built by Romans and not the English, that is not saying the English couldn't do it. It's not racist, okay? It is looking for evidence, okay? Now, perhaps he's wrong. Perhaps Graham is wrong, and that would be just fine. But what he's doing here is certainly not have anything to do with white supremacy. And to be very clear about where Graham's coming from on this, let's just show a clip of him saying the three places that he thinks Atlantis is most likely to have come from.
Of course, the error bars on this are quite large, but if an advanced Ice Age civilization existed, where do you think it was? Where do you think we might find it one day if it existed?
Well, this is where I'm often accused of presenting a God of the Gaps argument, that I think there was a lost civilization because there's lots of the Earth that archaeologists have never looked at. Of course, I'm not thinking that. These are very special gaps that I'm interested in. It's because those gaps involve places that were very interesting places to live during the Ice Age, and they specifically include the Sahara Desert, which was not a desert during the Ice Age and went through this warm, wet period when it was very, very fertile. Certainly some archaeology has been done in the Sahara, but it's fractional. It's tiny. The Amazon rainforest is another example of this. I think the Sahara is about 9 million square kilometers. The Amazon that's left under dense canopy rainforest is about 5 million square kilometers, maybe closer to 6. And then you have the continental shelves that were submerged by sea level rise at the end of the Ice Age. Now,
clearly his position is not some Aryan first view of Atlantis. And there are people that have that kind of view. There's a few people that you would find on the internet, like Robert Saphir, for example. He definitely has like this Aryan first view of the world, like the Aryans are the ones that did all the cool stuff, right? Why isn't he mentioned in this paper? Why do you never see him mentioned in these things? They're always talking about Grant. Well, I'll tell you why. Because these guys, they're sneaky, all right? If there's one thing you know how to be, it's sneaky. And if you're going to hold up guys like Graham and the community at large and say, well, these guys are enabling white supremacy, you can't really hold up the people that actually are white supremacists and put them next to each other, because then you're like, well, this is a white supremacist and then this guy's not. He's a nothing burger. So if they put Robert Saphir and Graham Hancock on the same spot and hold them next to each other, put them on the scale side by side, they're not going to be able to call Graham a racist anymore. And they know that. So they don't. They have to be able to follow this through. As far as they're concerned, this accusation of Graham being a white supremacist enabler, they call him a white supremacist. They're calling him a racist enabler. I'm not saying that you're a liar. I'm just saying that the words that come out of your mouth tend to enable falsehoods. This is just stupid semantic bullshit that anybody with half a brain can see through. But look at how they carry on with this crap. Just to prove my point here, look what they have to say. From the first few minutes of the first episode and throughout the series, Hancock tells viewers that archaeologists hate him, that we reject new ideas, and that we conspire to hide the truth. Now, when it comes to the authors of this paper, all those statements are true. I mean, Flint BS'd Joe Rogan and Graham on the debate, and the other guys are just, they're not fact-checking him. They're closing the ranks to defend him. They are absolutely hiding the truth when it comes to the history and the origin of Atlantis hunting and all that stuff. They manipulate everything that they can in order to forge this narrative. So that's actually a factual statement that Graham made there, that they tried to call it out as a lie. He insists archaeologists have a vested interest in protecting orthodox dogma, are closed-minded, and teach false narratives. While he interviews some archaeologists on location, he also features experts who comment outside their fields. A businessman who interprets Aztec architecture in Mexico, a marine biologist interprets beach rock in Bimini, and a chemical engineer interprets Neolithic iconography in Turkey. He repeatedly presents himself as a martyr for the truth against the narrow-minded dogma of mainstream archaeology. So they're butthurt because Graham called them out for being dogmatic, but they are being dogmatic. I mean, look, if you know anything about American archaeology, you guys know about the Clovis first debacle, right? Like, it was like the people in the Americas was supposed to have happened like 12,000 years ago or whatever, and there was a big debate about it, and anybody who found evidence from before that was ostracized, and they had to fight their way out of this freaking, you know, this little prison that they were shoved into by the Clovis police, as other archaeologists referred to them. And eventually evidence won the day, but it took like longer than it should have. That was a replay. This happened before. In the 30s, Folsom first was the whole debacle, the whole paradigm. And if you didn't believe the Folsom people were the first ones in the Americas, same thing. You were ostracized, you were demonized. You can even read about that on Wikipedia still, because I don't think John Hoops edits the Folsom Wikipedia page yet. I'm sure he will after he watches this. But anyway, that wasn't even the funniest part of that whole section. The part that really got to me was them saying, oh, these guys aren't even experts in their field. And it's like, dude, you guys send out Flint Dibble. It's a talk on Joe Rogan, and he works with dick bones and seeds. And not only does he not get plant fertilization right, but he's talking about underwater archaeology. He's talking about metallurgy. He's talking about archaeoastronomy. He's talking about all kinds of things that are well outside of his wheelhouse and his field of knowledge. Well, that doesn't matter. Or Milo Rossi, Mini Minuteman, right? He's barely an archaeologist if you really look at it. He's got a degree, but it's not specialized in anything. He's on the record of telling his viewers that if you're at a site that's got pot sherds, you just put them in a little pile, which is certainly not the kind of thing a real archaeologist would say. But that doesn't matter. That does not matter because he goes after Graham Hancock. So when he says stuff, he can expect the support of these guys because he's a tool in their arsenal. He's one of them. Well, that's messed up in and of its own right. But it really is funny to me when you look at, like, they complain about Dr. Martin Sweatman when they, in the paper there, they're saying that, you know, chemical engineer that was interpreting iconography, that's Dr. Martin Sweatman and his interpretation of Göbekli Tepe's Pili 43. And that's archaeoastronomy. And archaeoastronomy is a field that ever since Sir Alexander Thom, this is the inception of it being a accepted field of study, mathematicians have been involved. The way that this works is you have archaeologists and astronomers working together, and they try to iron out what the ancients may have been doing. So you're talking building alignment, trying to iron out where the ancients, what stars they may have looked at, what date to look for an alignment, and all of that jazz, right? Okay? And then when you have your proposed alignments, you use math to remove chance as much as possible. This has been the way it's done for a very long time. So Dr. Martin Sweatman, yeah, he's a chemical engineer, but he's a physicist. He's a number cruncher. He has a place here. Sir Alexander Thom is the man who put archaeoastronomy on the map as a legitimate field of science, and he was not a archaeologist or an astronomer. He was a number cruncher. He was a construction guy. He was an engineer. So this isn't new. And to say that Sweatman doesn't belong there is either bullshit or betrays ignorance on a fundamental level of archaeoastronomy. Either way, it's really messed up to see this in a paper by the Society for American Archaeology. I mean, they are applying double standards heavily, and they know that they apply double standards heavily, and they just do not care. And the title of the next section, well, that really says everything that you need to see about where these guys are with how this is, like how they view this whole mess. Who is Graham Hancock and why should you care? They're going to explain this to you, and I'll give you three guesses as to what their reasons are. Hancock has an undergraduate degree in sociology from Durham University and worked for many years as a journalist before becoming a best-selling author. His most popular book, Fingerprints of the Gods, presented his first version of an ancient apocalypse that eventually found its way to Netflix. This book includes problematic details such as claims that Olmec heads had unmistakable Negroid features, that the Sphinx was 10,000 years old, that a global flood caused by the shifting of the Earth's poles destroyed an Ice Age civilization, and that the ancient Maya predicted a cataclysm would happen again in December 2012. One of these things is not like the other. Look at their lines of reasoning here. Okay, now, the Sphinx being 10,000 years old or not based on context dating, okay, that's the kind of thing I would expect them to talk about, an archaeologist, a real one. You know, the Graham potentially talking about the 2012 apocalypse thing, okay, that's the kind of thing I wouldn't be surprised to hear them mention. Graham talks about a great global flood and they don't believe one happened. Okay, this is not, again, this is the kind of stuff that I can understand. But that's not what they started with, is it? No, they started with the Olmec heads and the Negroid features. And you'll notice that it's the only one of these claims that they put a citation for. And now, that is a subtle way of making it stand out even a little bit more. Again, one of these things is not like the other. If you're old and like me, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There is old Sesame Street BS. But one of the funniest things about this is the way that Graham carries himself compared to these guys. You'll notice that Flint does never admit that he did anything wrong. He'll admit that he got the UNESCO shipwreck estimate wrong, but even that he's not going to own. But I want you to see how Graham handles his use of the word Negroid when he's discussing the Olmec heads. This is what character looks like.
Finally, Returning to Flint's baseless allegation that I, quote, center white Europeans as able creators while chalking up the accomplishments of other peoples to outside influences, end quote, let's see what I've actually said on the record about the ethnic makeup of my proposed lost Ice Age civilization. First, a regret. Words like Negro, Negroid, and Caucasian, Caucasoid, were already politically incorrect in 1995 when I used them in Fingerprints of the Gods. 6 years earlier, however, in 1989, the word Negroid was still being used in The African Origins of Civilization, a highly regarded book by Senegalese scholar Cheikh Anta Diop to describe the physical appearance of people from Africa south of the Sahara. Meanwhile, in 1997, 2 years after the publication of Fingerprints, the Washington Post clearly felt no discomfort using the term Caucasoid in this report. And as late as 2008, in Chapter 3 of a book titled Everyday Anti-Racism, contributor Caro Mukhopadhyay still found it necessary to write, quote, "It is high time we got rid of the word Caucasian," end quote. I regret my own use of these much outdated and politically loaded terms in Fingerprints of the Gods. Even 30 years ago, this showed a lack of sensitivity on my part, while at the same time handing my critics a stick to beat me with decades later. Nonetheless, as those who have actually read Fingerprints must know, I attached no suggestion of racial superiority either to the terms Negro, Negroid, or to the terms Caucasian, Caucasoid.
Now contrast this with the opening line of the next paragraph. Hancock refutes any criticisms leveled at him. Like anyone else with a backbone, Graham's going to defend himself. And like anyone with integrity, he's going to admit when he got something wrong, but they'll not ever admit that themselves, because if these archaeologists were to admit that Graham does address and acknowledge when he makes errors, that whole narrative of he's a peddler of BS lies, it's going to be kind of hard to sell now, isn't it? And these guys, they're great at omitting pertinent details, as the rest of this paragraph shows. Wikipedia articles describe him as a pseudo-archaeologist or pseudo-scientist, to which he replies, "I find that rather absurd. I'm an investigative journalist," and says that referring to him as a pseudo-archaeologist is like referring to a dolphin as a pseudo-fish. Well, John Hoops, one of the authors of this travesty of a paper, he's weaponized Wikipedia, we'll just put it that way. He's very proud of the pages that he edits, and you'll notice that they tend to mostly be pseudoscience. Let's just read from Hoops' own Wikipedia page, his user page. "I'm an anthropologist of the faculty of the University of Kansas. I'm a longtime user and contributor to Wikipedia, and have also encouraged my students to create and edit articles. My principal research interests are the pre-Columbian cultures of Mesoamerica, Central America, and South America, with a special emphasis on the Ithmo-Columbian era. However, I also have a long-term interest in critical thinking and its application to fringe science and pseudoscience, especially pseudo-archaeology. I regularly encourage my students to develop skills in critically reading, writing, and revising Wikipedia articles on various topics. Some of the articles that I have created or substantially revised are Younger Dryas Impact Hypothesis, 2012 Phenomena, Augustus Le Plagnon, Charles Etienne Brasier de Beaubourg, both of those men were early believers in Atlantis, Chibchan Languages, Ithmo-Columbian Era, La Ciudad Blanca, Mayanism, Pseudo-Archaeology, Votan. So the statement in the paper, Wikipedia describes him as a pseudo-archaeologist, should probably read one of the paper authors, John Hoops, edited the Wikipedia page to say, Graham Hancock is a pseudoscientist. That's most likely the case here. And this is not a minor issue. This is the kind of thing that Hoops likes to go around frequently and tell people, hey, you should check out Wikipedia on this, and he'll send them to articles that he has edited or created, and he will not inform them of this clear conflict of interest. It's like you and I are debating about what year the freaking Nintendo game Mike Tyson's Punch-Out came out, And I say, well, just check Wikipedia. But I'm the one that edits the Mike Tyson's Punch-Out Wikipedia page. That's not really a very good, very honest tactic of mine, would it be? Of course not. These guys, man, they just do not care about honesty. It's really sad. And so we can complain about this all we want. I don't see Hoops or Dibble or Feagans changing their behavior on this one, because this is who they are. I don't even know how else to put it. This is the kind of thing you would think would get them censored academically or something, but Hoops has been doing this shit forever, and he don't get no trouble for it. He had tenure at this point, so whatever. He's basically untouchable from this crap from an academic perspective. Now, the next section's just a big pile of them patting each other on the back and saying, look at all these great things that we've done, but that they've already admitted didn't do any good. But, oh, you know, we talked about pseudo-archaeology. We talked about it in this article and at this seminar, and we wrote this book. And they talk about a couple of YouTubers, and you know, maybe that's a carrot that they're dangling, that they're like, hey, if you toe the right line, we'll put you in the SAA papers. And that might work with some YouTubers, but it doesn't work with me, because I already know I'm going to end up in an SAA paper. I'm sure the Flint Dibble's writing one about me as we speak, if Hoops isn't. So that carrot, that's not going to work with me, and I'm sorry. But they go straight from this to, you won't believe it, okay? They try to conflate the lack of the medical community's faith, the lack of the faith in the medical community, excuse me, in the wake of the whole COVID thing. They're trying to lay that at the feet of Graham Hancock. They're trying to say that pseudo-archaeology is the reason that medical field has less trust now than it did before 2020. And it's like there wasn't this big political debate surrounding that whole virus. There wasn't all this big arguments back and forth on the internet. There wasn't scientists on both sides injecting their ideological slant into it far over any actual science. And that is what damaged the medical community's faith or reputation in the public. No, they're not going to blame the medical community for fucking it up. Oh, no, they're going to blame Graham Hancock for it. I'm not kidding. Big brain moves with over here with these guys, man. The SAA, you really got to be like Mensa SAA. Pseudo-archaeology erodes public trust in archaeologists and science. In 2022, a Pew Research Center survey indicated that only 29% of U.S. adults had significant confidence in medical science with respect to public health, down from 40% in 2020. While archaeology is not medicine, cultural heritage matters for reinforcing indigenous, local, and national identities, pursuing scientific knowledge, promoting education, supporting museums and tourism, and contributing to the greater good. The rise of anti-science beliefs threatens cultural heritage just as it does medical science. Proponents assert the veracity of their own alternative explanations based on unreliable authorities. So not only are they trying to assert that the medical community isn't to blame, it's pseudo-archaeology, they're also talking about untrustworthy authorities, and that's... All right. Carl Feagans writes all kinds of hit pieces on Graham Hancock, and quite frequently they are lacking in proper information. John Hoops openly lied about John Major Jenkins in a scientific paper. I'll put a link to the paper, to the video I did on that. And he doesn't tell people that he edits Wikipedia when he tells them to go look at Wikipedia. And he also lies about his personal interactions with his colleagues. Something I can attest to, but I don't want to prove with receipts. Sorry. And then there's the last guy, Flint Dibble. And I think we all know at this point that he's not exactly what you would call a trustworthy authority. The next point that they use is the vandalism to the cartouche in the Great Pyramid. In 2013, a couple of German dudes scraped some paint off of the cartouche and they wanted to get it tested. And they didn't get away with it. And it, obviously this is a bad thing, right? Not that they didn't get away with it, but they did it. It's like, even if they had gotten away with it, unless the carbon dating was perfectly in line with what we already, like, mainstream academia accepts, then what good is it? They're just going to say the provenance is shit because these guys stole it. It could have came from anywhere, right? So right off the bat, it's no good. But then what's really funny is the way that they use this to, like, demonize oh, pseudo archaeology. Oh, these guys are all thieves. These guys are all they're vandals. These guys are the look. There's been two carbon dating expeditions to the Giza Plateau. Two. Both of them were financed by pseudo-archaeology. The Edgar Cayce Foundation and David Koch. Both times they were looking for older dates than what mainstream archaeology says. So this idea that pseudo-archaeology has nothing to offer is absurd. But they're going to pretend that it doesn't because for them to actually admit that working hand-in-hand with pseudo-archaeologists is how they've gotten some of the most important information that we have on ancient Egypt would not work when they're writing a bullshit hit piece like this one is. I'm sorry, scientific paper. And I know we just had a little break from it, but I'm sorry to say that they're not done crying about racism yet. They got a whole section coming up. The R word. And it's great because it doesn't just show their double standards, which it definitely shows. It lays out how they get there. I mean, these guys, they take the things that actual archaeology did that were bad and they lay it at the feet of pseudo-archaeology. They try to, they shift back and forth as much as possible. They use flowery words and just get your barf bags out, man. You're going to need them. Racism and white supremacy have been themes in archaeology of the Americas since its inception. The first problem-oriented excavations in what is now the United States were undertaken by Thomas Jefferson, a slaveholder, to address questions about the identity of the builders of mounds in Virginia. Now note the evidence that they use that these were problematic excavations is limited to Jefferson was a slaveholder. And that's true, and it should not be forgotten, and it's a big deal. But he was also one of the premier thinkers of his day. He was an inventor, a scientist, a statesman, president of the United States of America, author of the Declaration of Independence. The guy is kind of a big deal outside of just being a slaveholder, but you don't want to mention any of that if you're trying to demonize these excavations, right? And the whole point of this is to make Atlantis hunting is rooted in racism. Pseudoscience is rooted in racism, and it is so... Where's the nuance, boys? You guys are omitting the way that you just threw Jefferson under the bus there as racism's a nuanced thing when you look at it 200 plus years ago. He was elected to the White House. Okay. Now, I'm sure that his opponents would have used the fact that he owned slaves to keep him from the White House if the rest of the people would have cared, but so few did that he was still elected. That's not a good thing. Don't get me wrong. That's not a good thing. But it's the reality of the situation. And omitting that from the discussion, well, you can't really use today's barometer to start calling people racist, or everybody was racist back then. But they're only going to use it on the guys that they want to use to insinuate that Atlantis hunting is rooted in racism. As we go forward, this will be extremely clear and plain. Racist myths about mound builders have been addressed in detail in books by non-archaeologists and archaeologists. Racist literature includes popular 19th century publications by author Josiah Priest, especially American Antiquities and Discoveries in the West. Priest was a hyperdiffusionist, attributing archaeological remains in North America to almost anyone other than native peoples. Now, you may have noticed the constant references to Jason Colavito as an author for some of their papers and some of the articles that prove that this stuff is racist or whatever. Jason Colavito, he's an author. He writes articles and books and stuff every now and then. He's got a degree in anthropology, but basically he focuses a lot on debunking pseudoscience as well as pop culture and stuff, right? But he's an author, you could say, that is archaeology adjacent. He's one of their buddies and all of that stuff, much like Josiah Priest was back in the day. Now, Josiah Priest was a flaming racist by modern standards. Now, back in the day, he was embraced by academics. Now, the same academics that laid the groundwork for archaeology. And they're aware of this, but Colavito is the modern version of that. Not that he's racist, but he's just another author that gets acknowledged by the scientific community, gets an attaboy, gets a pat on the head. He's one of the good ones, okay? And one of the good ones a couple hundred years ago was racist as fuck by modern standards. But as we just discussed about Jefferson, times were different then, man. So that guy being racist as fuck, just like Jefferson still got elected, it didn't stop him from having a career. All right, the entire world was racist back then. And the funny thing here is, while these guys are certainly well aware of that, they act like all they have to do is just say, you know, we know that we had problems back then. We're better now, and everything's fine. And then they can just blast everybody else for their past because they didn't say we... It's the funniest thing ever. Even though we do say these sorts of things, these guys, man, just racist ideas in early American archaeology that harmed indigenous peoples throughout the Americas continues to this day. Archaeologists are still coming to terms with our own racist history, past and present. However, it is precisely because of this knowledge that the SAA has become a staunch advocate for the protection of indigenous sites, collaboration and consultation with indigenous communities and other stakeholders in archaeology, and the repatriation of Native American objects. In other words, these guys are so good at racism that they know what it looks like. Okay, so let's look at this for a second here. The university that John Hoops works at has been under fire recently for not having repatriated the Native American remains that they're supposed to have repatriated sometime around 1990 was when it was ordered to have been done. And they've been, like, getting protested and stuff. But, you know, they're not racist anymore. They're, you know, Hoops has time to point at us. The university that Flint Dibble worked at most recently in the States, it had a problem with Native American bones actually being used in classes as visual teaching aids by teachers, bones that were supposed to have been repatriated sometime around 1990. The Smithsonian Institute, it's immune to the law of repatriation from 1990, the NAGPRA laws. The Smithsonian Institute operates under laws that basically, it ain't repatriating shit if it don't want to. They ain't going to talk about none of this stuff. They ain't going to play into any... Nope. They are just going to say... The only time that they're going to reference that is how it helps them see racism. And they're going to look outside of their community and say, this guy's racist, that guy's racist, this guy's racist. But they're literally sitting on an institution that will give all the lip service in the world and drag their feet on when it comes to actually doing what they're supposed to do. Now, NAGPRA is an interesting thing where the Native American Graves and Repatriation Act, right? They're supposed to, like, this was passed in 1990, and it's been a hot minute since then, right? So the guys that were working then, a lot of them, I would guess, kind of sandbagged some of these. A lot of guys did not want this to pass. A lot of archaeologists back then were fighting this. A lot of archaeologists still ain't a fan. And NAGPRA gets more teeth all the time. But anyway, my point here is that this whole thing has been a battle for a very long time, and archaeologists act like, well, you know, we're just helping out the Native Americans. We're all chill now. We used to be bad, but now we're not. These guys are the bad ones, these guys that believe in Atlantis. And that's such a red herring. If you really want to talk about racism, John Hoops, for example, sits on Twitter all day long, and he could be in the anthropology department of the University of Kansas, helping catalog and repatriate the Native American bones that his university immorally obtained and illegally now holds. But he's too busy on Twitter fighting racism by talking crap about people that he has blocked. Pseudo-archaeology can perpetuate racist and white supremacist tropes of Victorian anthropology. These include hyperdiffusionism and models for a unitary origin of civilization that typically attributes civilization to white people and not others. Now, this is factually incorrect. The guys that invented the idea of hyperdiffusionism, that is one culture basically like taught all the other cultures after the Great Flood, these guys both believed that it was the Maya, not the Aryans. One of them even said that he laughs at the ideas of it being the Aryans, but they ain't gonna say any of that. they're going to try to cling to the idea that it is a white Atlantis. And the way they're going to do that is to cite some really unsavory people, because you can't get, you know, Graham Hancock or anybody else this. You have to just go to the bottom of the barrel. Frank Collin, a former neo-Nazi activist who wrote books about Atlantis, Lemuria, and other fringe topics, favors white identities for advanced civilizations and was a founding editor of Ancient American Magazine, which promotes hyperdiffusionism. Whoa, an open, card-carrying Nazi believed that Aryans were better than other people? Pull the other one. You're bullshitting me. I mean, come on. I hope he didn't believe in carbon dating, because if he did, then C-14 would be enabling white supremacy, right? No? No, that's not how that works. That's kind of funny, isn't it? It's kind of weird. It's almost like this is not a scientific argument. It's almost like it's pseudo-psychology. It's almost like they just make shit up and just say whatever the hell they want and don't support any of the correlation versus causation. They don't support any cause and effect. That is to say, there's no chain of them proving one thing leads to another. They just tie these loose correlations together. Oh, this guy believes in this, and he happens to also believe in this. Therefore, and they go on to call, what's the guy's name? Marco Vigato. They go on to call him a racist, or, you know, Jason Colavito's twists his words to come up with that anyway. And then we get this little gem. Throughout Fingerprints of the Gods, Hancock identifies Quetzalcoatl and Viracocha, foreign heroes, as white and or Caucasian, citing Ignatius Donnelly and Constance Irwin's Fair Gods and Stone Faces, about which one reviewer wrote, "It is clear there is nothing scientifically valid about this book." It's also clear there's nothing scientifically valid about this paper, but what do you expect from a freaking hit piece written by a few ideologues? Look, Flint Dibble cited V. Gordon Child in his dissertation, and V. Gordon Child was a flaming racist who believed the Aryans were superior. And Flint cited him, and I didn't see a part where he said, "I have to separate myself from this guy's BS." Of course not. Flint wasn't citing him in regards to racism or anything, so Flint doesn't feel like he needs to, even though he would absolutely require Hancock to do so. Otherwise, you may well be inciting white supremacy. These kinds of double standards make people hate academics. And what's worse, or at least really, really bad to me as well, is the way that they are labeling all of these things as pseudoscience when they were the product of mainstream archaeology at its time. Hyperdiffusionism was a product of mainstream archaeology, not pseudo-archaeology. And they're going to call it pseudo-archaeology when somebody still believes in it today, and that's fine. If you wanted to label it that, I can get why they would go there. But you can't call it pseudo-archaeology when it was 150 years ago. It was archaeology. So the idea that this is like our inheritance of all the racism that was attached to that, it's like, dude, you are trying to kick it out of your own field and blame it on us. It's like, no. We've separated the wheat from the chaff with this. You're trying to dump that chaff back in. Keep it. It belongs to you. It don't belong to us. But of course, they ain't going to have none of that. Their world is exempt. Ours is not. While the intent of these authors is unclear, pseudo-archaeology often supports and reinforces ideologies of racial superiority and white nationalism, therefore potentially contributing to violence and injustice against black and indigenous people, as well as other people of color. Seriously, the intent of Hancock is it's unclear what these guys really mean. We know that it is dangerous to people of color. I mean, my God, okay? First of all, you don't know what Hancock's saying? Okay, well then why you spend so much time debunking him if you're not sure what he's getting at here? Second of all, really? Inciting violence against people of color? You fuck these guys. First of all, let me just say that out the gate. At this point, they are weaponizing racism in a way that it's a red herring, man. Not only are they demonizing Graham, but they are actually taking, if anybody sees what they have to say and they actually want to fight against racism, they got them pissing up a rope, because they are going to do absolutely nothing against racism in the real world fighting against guys like Graham Hancock and the pseudo-archaeology narrative. It does not contribute to violence against people of color. You will be hard-pressed to find it ever doing so. But, you know, they didn't bother putting any citations here either. So they just say, you know, like they said earlier, there's just readily apparent how this stuff is. Look, the Anti-Defamation League, these would be the premier people on labeling things racist in the world, and you might not agree with them politically, and that's fine. They don't have a single mention of Atlantis in their database. They have Pepe the Frog, they have the Moon Man from McDonald's, they have all kinds of symbols and all kinds of goofy little memes that are off in the corner of something that most of us are not even aware of. But they don't have a single mention of Atlantis in their database. The experts on racism. Now, the experts on dick bones and seeds, they will say that it's racist. Because they're in arguments with the guys that believe in different dick bones and different seeds, I guess, or big rocks as the case may be. It's kind of crazy, really, when you think about it, isn't it? It is very clearly an ideological tool, very clearly them misusing racism. And this is, I mean, there's some things that when you accuse people of, you really are scraping the bottom of the barrel. And here we are. The claim that such a civilization served as a basis for white saviors who spread civilizing knowledge through diffusion and or hyperdiffusion reinforces racism. Depriving indigenous cultures of their own rich legacy reinforces false and pernicious assertions of indigenous inferiority and perpetuates harm. Now, no one is making that sort of claim of white saviors, at least not Graham Hancock, and he's the most influential person in the sphere, right, of the hyperdiffusionism lost civilization community. And he's very clear about this, that he doesn't think it's white saviors. And in addition to that, you can see it in season 2 of Ancient Apocalypse, him talking to indigenous people and being very respectful and very honest about, like, an open with them, having a good discussion, acknowledging that these were their ancestors and whatnot, and asking them what they believe their origins myths are and stuff, and taking them more or less at face value. And if you compare that, I'll give you a really great example of the diminishment of the concept of the minds of the Native American people or indigenous people around the world. When you talk about the numerous flood myths from around the world, and people say the entire world was flooded out and only a few people survived. Typically, the answer by debunkers of lost civilizations is, well, those guys, they just, you know, they lived in that little small area, their whole little area of the world flooded. That's all that they thought the world consisted of, was that little 40-mile chunk or whatever. So that's how that works. Now, never mind the fact that we know trade routes went thousands and thousands and thousands of miles back in the day. We find obsidian from Canada and Mexico. Never mind all that. These guys were so dumb that they didn't know that the world was bigger than their backyard. The archaeologists and anthropologists dismiss indigenous myths. They colonize them, you could even say. If you were a indigenous person, you might see that as a white man's science coming in and reinterpreting your myth for you. In other words, archaeology and anthropology potentially enables violence against people of color. Of course, I'm kidding here, but do you see how easy it was for me to make the same argument? And honestly, I do believe my points were far more grounded in historic fact and less reaching. I can put citations for it if you'd like. And they go back to the circle jerk for the third time. Here's a list of articles and papers and videos that we've made to combat pseudoscience, even though we've already acknowledged that we're losing ground to those guys. So it's just another mess of ego and, you know, patting each other on the back. Hey, good job, guys. Good job. Good job. Good job. Circle jerk. And it's kind of funny that the SAA would even publish things like this, because the reality of it is, as we've seen in the last couple of days here, the biggest thing to damage the credibility of archaeology is archaeologists themselves that come out and be dishonest, massage the facts, or just dismiss and treat the pseudo guys like a bunch of freaking morons. And of course, the SAA, Flint, Hoops, Feegans, these guys are painfully unaware of this fact and have basically no chance at all of ever tuning into it. The popularity of Ancient Aliens, Ancient Apocalypse, and the like indicate that there is an intense public interest in the ancient world. However, popularity based on fake information fosters apprehension, open hostility, and malicious conspiracy theories that put science, higher education, and government in a harmful light. Professional archaeologists are not engaged in conspiracies to conceal information, and archaeologists, in fact, regard publication and ongoing debate, including public debate, about our findings to be fundamental to what we do. The Smithsonian is not hiding the skeletons of giants. We must continue to foster both credibility and trust through our professional activities and public outreach. Do you see what I mean? There's like no self-awareness at all. We've already know that in the debate on Joe Rogan that Flint used fake information to debunk Atlantis. We've seen that John Hoops has done the same with John Major Jenkins and doesn't like to tell people about Wikipedia, that he likes to edit it. This paper has a number of just, you know, slightly, just massage the facts a little bit and just kind of forget about that. We'll word things a certain way. They are doing everything in their power to be underhanded, it seems, which is pretty hilarious when they say, oh, we're going to try to foster trust and credibility with the public. It's like, dude, by what? By taking the interested amateurs and calling them a bunch of white supremacist enablers? Way to go. By going on Joe Rogan and lying about a bunch of stuff and then doubling down on it and watching your entire community get behind the liar? That's your plan? Man, that's a smart plan to get the public to like you guys. You see what I mean? This is absurd. This is absolutely insane. They're even coming close to fostering credibility here. You cannot go around calling people white supremacists and expect them to like you, okay? I don't know how much easier I can put this. And if somebody feels like the words that you're saying are calling them a white supremacist, and your excuse is, I'm not calling you a white supremacist, I'm just... Look, dude, you're insulting them, and they're feeling like you're calling them that. They're saying as much. Maybe, just maybe, you could try rewording what you say. I know it's a crazy concept, but maybe the archaeologists could stick to the archaeology side of things and foster some trust by being impartial bearers of knowledge to the community. Wow. Man, I'm glad that I got a GED instead of a PhD, because apparently the scientific method is something that they unteach as higher education continues. Anyway, I want to thank you guys a lot for watching this far. I thank Rube at the beginning. I also want to thank archaeologist Paul Hill. He's like the only archaeologist that I've had recently that's like open on Twitter and swinging. Besides Mark Young from the Comet Research Group, which most of you guys that aren't pyramidites would say doesn't count as archaeologists, you fucking assholes. But anyway, Paul Hill is like a mainstream archaeology dude, and he's open on Twitter actively saying, you know, I don't agree with Graham on this, and this, but I think that this is bullshit, and I appreciate him, you know, highlighting some of this stuff, that like Flint using the child's references and things like that. Links to those guys' stuff is down below on the Twitters. Go ahead and give them follows. I want to thank you guys all very much for watching this far. I'm working on some merch, so like, if you have ideas of stuff that you would like to see, seriously, let me know down below, because I'm having people say that they want like t-shirts and coffee cups, I guess, is what it sounds like so far. So anyway, let me know on anything like that down below. There's also other links to support the channel. Click the bell. Tell your grandma about the great Dedunking channel that you love so much. Thanks a lot for watching, and we will see you next time.